And it's difficult to find a unit under these circumstances, except they have what they call little marker flags, or they're little signposts, only stand a couple of feet out of the ground. Our code number for our unit was 55, and they just told us to keep following 55 axis, they call it, and to just keep moving along, and these little posts were stuck in at every intersection of the road, country roads, so you'd know which way to go. And we slid and slithered all the way up to the front line. When I got code, we were given code names. The code names in the front line are changed every day. And when you're challenged by guards at various intervals, you have to know the code name. And so we were given the proper code name for the day. And then when we'd be challenged as we went up closer and closer, why we could get through. And finally, then we'd ask where the headquarters was for the Royal Canadian Regiment. And this time, about this time, they were in a farmhouse, and I reported in there, and it would be about 2 o'clock in the morning. You do most troop movements at night, mainly so you're not seen by the enemy, and you can, that's the time to move around with the least casualties. But when I went into the farmhouse, the officer in charge, as I remember, was a major at the time. I had heard that the unit had just had a very bad action the day previously, in which they'd lost a whole company, Charlie Company, in a river crossing, taken a lot of casualties, lost a lot of officers, and the colonel, the battalion commander, had been fired over the thing, and the only one left, the senior officer left, was a second in command, who I believe was an ex-newspaper man too. And his name was Strome Galloway. He had a big handlebar mustache, remember, and carried a cane. Like a lot of the British officers affected canes, which they just carried in the front line.
What was his rank?
He was a major. And so anyway, we reported to him, and he kind of snorted. His greeting to us was, "Well, we don't need officers. How many officers do you have?" I told him 3, and he says, "Well, we don't need officers. We need men." He had been drinking pretty well, and that was typical in the middle of the night in the front line, and wasn't considered unusual, drinking the company's rum supply, which was pretty powerful. Anyway, he didn't give us a very cordial greeting. And so anyway, he told me that since I was the senior officer, I could have X company. Well, he said that with kind of a sneer. And there's no such thing, really, in the regular Army command structure as an X company. But what it was it was the remains of Charlie Company. Charlie Company had been pretty well shot up, prisoners, wounded, killed the night before. So there wasn't anything left of it. And this was the remains of Charlie Company, plus anybody else they could drag up from the rear to sort of plug up a hole in the line. And they wouldn't even dignify it with the designation of Charlie Company. They called it X Company. And so they gave me that company. And I found them in another farmhouse. They had a sergeant there in charge of them at the time. And I went over and introduced myself, tried to be friendly with them. There was a lot of shell shock cases in there. And as I've said many times since then, I don't think they could have fought their way out of a paper bag at that moment. They were pretty well beat up. The sergeant himself was pretty jumpy. He only had evidently a couple of weeks of more service to go. He had come all through North Africa and settled in Sicily, and he was going to be repatriated if he could survive another 2 weeks. And he was pretty anxious to get out of there. And he was a little nervous about me being so fresh and gung-ho because I hadn't been in there long enough yet to acquire any fear. And I walked around out in the open with a lot of mortar shells dropping sporadically and didn't seem to bother. And it didn't bother me at the time. Not until much later did I start to get nervous myself about that stuff. But at that time, it didn't seem to bother me, although we didn't like it. So anyway, I tried to cheer them up and tell them that things were going to be better. Everything was going to be okay. The Italians, the Po River Valley is very much like the country around Santa Rosa in California, actually, except that there are a lot of rivers which we had to wade over and over again because they serpentined around. And so it is, but the Italians have a way of building farmhouses right into the dikes of these things. And actually, they made pretty good observation points, except that the enemy would focus on them with their artillery and knock them down around your ears when you were in there. And this is what happened. Evidently, the day before we came up as reinforcements, this one farmhouse that my unit was using as an observation point for their river crossing and as a fire control point, probably, was flattened by enemy tank fire and artillery fire, and we lost half a dozen men killed in there. They hadn't been unburied from the rubble yet, so I was ordered to go up with about six men and dig them out, whoever was left there. Well, so we worked our way back up to the front in broad daylight. We weren't bothered with any sniper fire. And remember, there are high banks on either side of these rivers, so they actually can't see you from one side until you get up on top of the dikes. So we worked our way up to the front, and we dug through the rubble, and I think we come out with three or four bodies.